Basketball Podcast. This is Viz back, and we have two new guys on, two of our regular writers, Brett and Craig. Brett, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great.
Craig, how about you? How's 4 a.m. at your time? Thanks for coming on with us bright and early.
Yeah, no worries. Tonight, glad to be on.
So I guess the biggest thing lately is Isaiah Thomas's return. He came back against Portland on Tuesday night, played 18 minutes, looked like he had his athleticism, which was the most encouraging thing to me. He ended up playing 18 minutes, 17 points on 12 shots, 3 assists. You know, they're obviously easing him in. He did not play Wednesday night against his old team in Boston. We'll start with you, Brett. What do you think the impact this has on, you know, the rest of the Cavs on the team, be it, you know, LeBron, Love, down the line? You know, we'll start there. And, you know, as far as the rest of the season, what to expect from Isaiah, what to expect from the other Cavs?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think just overall, you know, it's only going to be positive for everybody. If there's one person that could be affected negatively, it would probably be Kevin Love. However, I don't think it'll be that bad. I think you just may lose some points just because now you have this other major scoring option there. But I think it's going to open up a lot of wide open threes. So we're going to see a lot of threes from Kevin Love, just maybe not the volume of scoring that we've seen so far this season. But, you know, there's still quite a bit of time for Isaiah to get ramped up and where he's going to be playing in back-to-backs and going to be playing the amount of minutes that he's going to get. So I wouldn't freak out if I was a Kevin Love owner because the other stats that he provides you are still going to be there. I think the biggest beneficiaries from Thomas coming back are going to be Crowder and Dwayne Wade. I think those two guys, especially Crowder, I mean, he's been a huge disappointment this year from a fantasy and real life perspective. But the fact that him and Thomas played together before, so Thomas really understands Crowder's game. He knows where he likes the ball. But I think just having that other option besides LeBron, who can get into the lane, who's a threat from three, you know, this other scoring threat is going to open up those kickouts to those baseline threes that Crowder loves. Both Crowder and Wade are really good at just cutting to the rim. And when Thomas gets into the key and draws in those bigger guys, he's going to be able to just give a lot of little dish offs to Wade and Crowder to get in. And I think we saw that in the first game, even with limited minutes. Crowder, you know, had one of his better fantasy games of the season. Wade had a really great across-the-board game, just really filled the stat sheet. And I only think it's going to get better for those guys. So, I mean, if Crowder's on your waiver wire and, you know, I mean, if you're in a deeper league, you got to grab him. Even in smaller leagues, you know, you may want to take a look if you have some injuries or you have some guys worth cutting. I mean, Crowder, you know, could be a guy who could step up with a couple threes a game, 17, 18 points, you know, probably 6 boards and a few steals. So I would definitely think that he's going to get impacted the most. And then just as far as I don't think he's going to affect LeBron at all. If anything, it's going to give LeBron, it's going to help him avoid missing games. He's going to even be more consistent. His assist numbers could even go higher, just having another guy like that to throw it to. He's going to be more refreshed towards the end of the season too, which is just going to allow him to keep going. As far as Thomas goes, what we saw this last game, I mean, if he was able to do that in his first game after a 7-month layoff, I would be really excited if I had been holding on to Thomas to this point. Hopefully, you know, your team wasn't too far in the cellar, or, you know, you've managed to hang on with your other draft picks. Because Thomas is going to come back and he's going to be a beast. I wouldn't worry about him not being the number one option because initially he's going to be coming in with the second unit. I'm not sure how long that'll last, but he's going to have a ton of opportunities. He's got great guys to kick it off to. And I mean, just the fact that he didn't really look that rusty has got to have Thomas owners super excited. He won't quite have the impact he had in Boston just because he won't be so much of the focal point, But right. You know,
I mean, what are the odds you would have repeated last year anyway? I mean, that was such an incredible offensive season. You're right, though. I mean, what are the odds that keep playing Jose Calderon for 20 minutes? It just seems like a waste, honestly. Your thoughts, Craig, on how Cleveland's going to look going forward?
Well, I think the interesting thing from a fantasy perspective is going to be the effects on the three-point shooting, really. I mean, if you look at sort of Isaiah Thomas last year, shot a career 8.5 threes for the Celtics, and actually in his first game for Cleveland had 8 attempts, so it sort of fit quite similarly in line. But, I mean, fundamentally, there's only going to be so much three-point shooting to go around. I mean, what, Kevin Love has averaged 5 shots from beyond the arc this year, LeBron, 5.8 for Love, LeBron's averaged 5. So I'm curious to see how much they rely on Isaiah Thomas off the ball, more so than on the ball, sort of on the perimeter as such. So I think how it sort of plays out on any given night in terms of how many shots from downtown is going to be sort of quite crucial for the fantasy value going forward for Thomas and Love. I mean, one thing that is for sure is that obviously once Thomas ramps up and starts getting some heavier minutes, I think the importance of Jay Crowder from a real-life basketball point of view becomes really significant because of his ability to play defense. I mean, Isaiah Thomas isn't exactly noted for elite-level defense. So from a fantasy perspective, we might see quite a lot of aggression from Crowder on the defensive end, so we might see a ramp-up in those numbers. I mean, like you said, it was an incredible year for Isaiah Thomas. I'm not expecting anything near those lines. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays in terms of how much on the ball he will play and how the Cavs actually use him. Obviously, LeBron's a primary ball handler for them. I don't see that really changing. So I think it's a bit of a fluid process at the moment moving forward. It's a fluid process moving forward. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is a 38% three-point shooter, higher success rate than LeBron. And I can see those assist numbers dipping. I think, the points will be around the low 20s. I think it's going to be, like I said, a bit of a fluid process. I think we really need to just see a few more games to see how it really pans out.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they're playing Love at center so much that, I mean, this offense could push Golden State or Houston's, actually Toronto's up there with them too, for the top offense in the league. But you're right. I mean, outside of LeBron, you're counting on Crowder so much defensively. And, Wade's not going to shoot threes. I thought it was interesting in this, again, it's only one game. You don't want to judge too much. But, J.R. Smith played 24 minutes and only shot 1 3. But, Crowder and Love and Thomas end up putting up 21 between them. I just don't see how anyone's really going to stop them if Isaiah gets back on track. But on the other hand, how are they going to be able to stop anybody either when you have Love at center and Isaiah as point guard? I think we're just going to see a ton of high-scoring games for Cleveland. I agree on, the speculation ad on Crowder. Just in case, he puts it together. You're right. I mean, he shot over 50% last year on catch and shoot corner threes. And, whether it's LeBron or Isaiah, he's going to get a ton of open looks. And I would be all for grabbing him. You don't have to spend as much time on Houston because it's only a 2-week injury for Harden. But do you guys see anyone emerging as a better fantasy option with Harden?
Well, Alex,
what's that? Yeah, more to say.
Do you mind if I jump in really quick?
Go ahead.
One last thing on Thomas. Just don't discount the motivation factor for Isaiah. Not only to prove to the world, I'm sure he was really hurt by what the Celtics did, but also being in this contract year, knowing that he could have potentially cost himself that injury could have cost him a boatload of money. He is going to he's so focused, and we saw what happens when he is focused and playing with intensity in those playoffs before he went down. He's going to have that type of motivation for the rest of the season. So we saw in 17 minutes what he was capable of doing. Once he gets fully back and playing that time, watch out. I mean, he's going to be pushing it, and you know his teammates are going to really support him and want to get him the ball and want him to do well, too. So, definitely look at the motivation factor there with Thomas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a chance, you know, say LeBron leaves, that if he plays well enough, Cleveland just decides they're going to pay him a lot. They're going to run back Love, have, you know, whoever this lottery pick is going to end up being, and try to, you know, not completely bottom out. And, you know, the number of teams with cap space is shrinking almost by the day. You know, for Isaiah to get the contract he's looking for, there are not many teams who could give it to him at this point. So hoping that, you know, it's Cleveland and that Dan Gilbert sucks up the luxury tax bill, whether it's, you know, LeBron leaving or LeBron staying. You're talking potentially $100 million on the line for Isaiah, depending on how he finishes the year.
Do you not have some concern in regards to the fact that a guy like Isaiah Thomas relies so much on explosion, and obviously the issues with this hip are going to sort of negatively impact his game, possibly in the long run as well. Do you think there is some real cause for concern moving forward to not get too excited about Thomas, that there could be a loss in quickness, a loss of explosion?
I would say
absolutely.
Go ahead, Brent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been kind of hogging this subject, so I'll let you go, sorry. Alex. But just real quick, just want to say, from a GM's perspective and a team owner perspective, it's going to be really hard for somebody to back up the Brinks truck for, you know, a little guy who, yeah, does exactly like you said, Greg, rely so much on that explosion factor. So they're really going to be paying a lot of attention to how he responds. And, you know, as long as it's not kind of a degenerative thing and it's just one of those fluke things that he's over, then I think he should be okay because he's still young. But I think from a fantasy perspective for this season, you know, I wouldn't have any concerns. But yeah, definitely long term, I think that's going to cause a lot of jittery GMs and owners.
Right. Go ahead, Kirk.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and I think the kind of price it's going to cost me to get Isaiah Thomas, I think, is probably going to be too much of a gamble for me. I do have concerns over the hip, and I do think that the Cavs are going to, this season especially, they're probably going to be more cautious during the regular season with him. So I don't think I'm ready to sort of push too many chips in yet from a fantasy perspective. I want to wait and see, you know, if he's, how much he's going to get rested, how long it takes for him to get up to, starters' minutes. I do have some caution there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's
going to be the top. Yeah, I haven't made any trade offers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be the top 25 guy he was last year. Maybe, I don't even know if he'll be top 50. It's hard to say. I mean, obviously, he should be owned because the upside is there. It's hard to say. I was impressed how he looked athletically in his first game. But for the rest of the year, it's really hard to say. But I agree that I definitely wouldn't want to be the team giving him a long-term contract. I mean, he's going to be 29 next month. Guys like him just do not age well in general. And, maybe the money's just not there. We saw with Toronto where they end up getting Kyle Lowry back on a three-year deal instead of, everyone's assuming he's going to get a max. Paul Millsap was on the older end. Everyone thought he was going to get a four-year deal. He ends up getting a 2+1 from Denver. So maybe teams are getting smarter about it, and it's just that sucks even more for Isaiah that the hip injury happened, because it makes it less likely that he is going to get the money he was hoping for.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. I just have this little thing in the back of my mind, that the Celtics, especially now, they're a very smart organization, I think, and I think there's still more to this story than we don't know, and I think a lot of it is medical. I think that, like Brent said, I think the motivational side is really interesting from a Thomas perspective. But I think he's one of these guys that, because of the lack of defense, the reliance on the explosion and the injury, the hip injury, mm-hmm. I think he could be one of these guys that could be sort of a bit on the bubble, like you said, sort of in the upcoming seasons of what money will he get, where will he be, what will his role be. I think there's a little bit more to this story still to come.
There certainly might be.
Well, I wanted to
go ahead.
I was going to say I wanted to do a quick I wanted to ask you guys a quick poll, and that, you know, trying to not get sucked in by the first game hype, his first game back. You know, who won this trade in real life?
Boston, no doubt.
If you go listen to the podcast I did in the summer, I thought the Cavs won, and now it's hard to say it's not Boston. To me, it was more getting that Brooklyn pick when Kyrie didn't want to be there still. But at the same time, I mean, Kyrie has shown more this year than I think I've seen in the past. The effort on the defensive end is encouraging. And you know, at the end of the day, how many guys, you know, he's done on the biggest stage, and how many guys can we say, you know, have stepped up and can beat anybody one-on-one in isolation? You know, he fits perfectly with Boston's plan too. I mean, at this point, it's hard to say that it's not, you know, Boston who's the winner. It's just, I have to admit when I'm wrong. Like, when the trade happened, I liked it for Cleveland, in all honesty.
You see, I'm the other way, and I know a lot of guys that read my stuff will vouch for this. A lot of the conversations that I've had with guys within my circles, we had massive debates at the time. And for me at the time, you know, Kyrie Irving's still only 25. We forget that. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is 29, coming off that injury history. I mean, the Brooklyn pick has significant value. But when you're in Boston's positions where you've invested a lot of money in a lot of high draft picks, you've got a lot of rookies there. From a financial standpoint, the bubble's got to burst, and you've got to disperse those assets in the right way to make it financially viable in the long run. I mean, obviously, that pick from Brooklyn is going to be huge, but I mean, that could potentially be, what, number seventh pick in the draft? Maybe someone like Colin Sexton, you know, it will be someone significant. But you don't miss up on the opportunity to give up, to not get someone like a Kyrie Irving, even if it costs you a draft pick, a top draft pick. And let's not forget that, you know, they're going to get the Lakers pick this year, as long as it falls within the 2-5 range.
Right.
And there becomes a point from a financial standpoint that you can only stockpile assets for so long before it financially doesn't become viable. I mean, look at the Okafor situation in Philadelphia and the Noel situation. I mean, you know, these top draft picks end up earning a lot of money because of the way the rookie rules, the rookie contracts go. And you've got to balance it out. So, you know, Boston, for me, even though they did lose that draft pick, I mean, Crowder's salary was going to become an issue at some point for what they wanted to achieve. They were losing a guy, you know, a 29-year-old point guard who doesn't play defense, and you know, Brad Stevens, you know, is a guy that builds around defense, and you know, what he's done with sort of Tatum, you know, the difference in his defense from summer league to now, and the same with Kyrie Irving, you know, it's a world of improvement. You know, to bring in a guy, you know, a superstar like Kyrie Irving, that Boston needed a finisher, you know, he can finish with both hands around the rim. You know, he's a real elite guy. And I think that, for me at the time, for what Boston were trying to achieve, it was a win, no doubt, in my mind.
Well, I don't know if I'm a tiebreaker here or not, but whenever I get asked about a fantasy basketball trade and people say, Brent, you know, what should I do here? Did I get the best deal, or should I do this trade? And I always look at which team is getting the best player. And almost like 99% of the time, I side with the team that's getting the best player is the team on the right side of the trade. And in this case, Kyrie Irving was easily the best player in this trade. And not, and you know, Celtics didn't know Gordon Hayward was going to have that fluke injury. Sure. I mean, at the time, I'm like, wow, the Celtics just did amazing job getting Kyrie Irving. So I still stand by that the Celtics won that deal. Just because they got hands down the best player, and like, you know, like Craig said, 25 years old, and still 2 years left on his deal. I mean, it almost seems like a steal at this point.
No, at this point, there's no way around it. It's a pretty clear steal. Crowder hasn't been as good
even
as
at the
they
time.
Hoped too. I mean, at the time, like, I don't know. Again, look, in retrospect, I was completely wrong, and I'll admit it. I thought Crowder was going to be a bigger key to the team that he was, and I thought, yes, Isaiah's horrible defensively, but Kyrie was as bad. Now, not to the level Isaiah, solely because you can get Isaiah switched on anybody, and now that guy is just, you know, he's dead meat. But, you know, no one fought less through screens than Kyrie did, and now he's bought in. I mean, it's not a blessing in disguise that Hayward got hurt. That's obviously ridiculous to say, but the emergence of Tatum at this age is clearly had to surpass Ainge's even expectations, and he wanted it. He would have took him first overall if he didn't make that trade back. So, I mean, you're right. Boston's in a prime spot if they do get, you know, I call it the late Kings pick. If they do get the Lakers pick this year, it's going to be even better. And again, he has still has plenty of ammo. If, you know, New Orleans does decide, hey, Anthony Davis might leave, no one's going to be able to make a better offer than Boston. And, you know, there are plenty of cases like that. And it's just so much to look at in that regard. And obviously Davis isn't going to be traded at this deadline, but are there any guys who you're looking at that you think are locks to be moved at the trade deadline that could make a real impact on a team? Other, you know, guys who you think could have an impact in the second half, whether they're just a sleeper because you think they're going to get more time, they're going to get more time because somebody else gets hurt. Guys that you think are sell highs because of what could happen to them. I'm willing to go anywhere with this, really. But, you know, a guy who's had a massive year to me, who I think is a pretty decent sell high if you could, is Tyreke Evans. I don't see any way that Memphis is going to keep him. Memphis, they're sitting fourth last. They lose their draft pick if it's not in the top eight. So their incentive they're incentivized to stay down at the bottom. And Tyreke's role has been so massive. And he fits on a lot of teams, but I don't see him being able to come close to what he's doing right now for Memphis. I mean, he's playing 31 minutes. He's averaging 25.5 with over a steal, and he's actually making over two threes a game for a guy who never made a ton of threes. He's a sell high to me if you could. And the problem is I don't know, even if they trade him, if anybody is going to emerge from this Memphis team, because they are a real mess right now, top to bottom.
Yeah, I wrote in the recap I did yesterday for Sun, who, you know, was a bit under the weather, so he had me do the recap yesterday, and I was writing that Marc Gasol and Memphis is missing Mike Conley so bad, and Gasol especially. I mean, I don't know what's going on with him.
He might he looks horrible. I did not expect that.
Yeah.
I mean.
And as a Tyreke Evans owner, I grabbed him off waivers in a money league really early on, and obviously that's a big reason why I'm in first place. And I've been itching, you know, I've been looking at trading him and selling high, and it's so hard because every time I look to do it, he has a monster game.
I mean, I guess that is.
And I go, can I do this?
I guess that is the good thing, is that people just got him off waivers for the most part, so it's not like you really drafted him. You're not losing much if he does fall off, because the odds are you just claimed him. Craig, do you have any?
But what's good value coming back?
That's true, too. I mean, I don't know. You look at, you know, on the player raters, he's somewhere in the 30s to 40s. I mean, I don't know who like. Bradley Beal's had a comparable year to him, but I can't imagine a Bradley Beal owner is going to make that trade, you know, so I don't know what you'll be able to get for him. It's a tough situation. Let's focus more on breakouts, I guess. Do you guys
Go back to Tyreke Evans a second?
Okay, go ahead.
Does anyone not have any concerns about the injuries situation?
That's part of the reason to sell high.
We're talking about a guy who played what 14 games last year, 26 games the year. 40 games last year, 25 games the year before. I mean, you know. From a skill set point of view, I think what he's doing is legit. I just can't ever trust the guy again, I don't think. I mean, what he's doing is amazing, and I think it's excellent for what people, you know, what people invested, the return that you're getting.
Right.
But if I had the opportunity even to get, you know, 75 cents on the dollar, like you said, he could get traded. He could go down at any time. I don't really want any part of Tyreke Evans whatsoever. Maybe it's a bit of a pessimistic kind of statement. I just have some serious trust issues there right now.
It's worth mentioning for sure. He's definitely an injury risk. There's no way around it. And like you said, he can fall off at any time. I mean, there are plenty of teams who could use him. I look at, you know, I don't know what it would take to even acquire him, but you know, Boston doesn't really have a guy in the second unit that's a primary ball handler. I think he would fit in really well there. But if he goes there, he's probably not playing more than, I don't know, 24 minutes tops, and now he's playing 31 right now, so just that alone would kill his value. Like I said, I just don't see the incentive for Memphis to keep him, so no matter where he goes, his role is going to diminish.
But, for sure.
Either one of you guys.
I wake up in a cold sweat about Tyreek Evans almost every other day when I see the GTD game time decision
right
next to his name. And he keeps playing. So, I mean, I might regret it, but I'm having a hard time pulling the trigger right on a deal with him.
I think a lot of it comes sometimes as well about how we play the game. I mean, from my point of view, I try to sort of like establish a team for what, for when the playoffs come, what my team's going to look like, if that makes sense. And I just have serious concerns that when it comes playoff time, Tyreek Evans is going to have zero value to my team just through injury. So, it's like the Anthony Davis effect, isn't it? Every time that something happens, you just wince, don't you? But I'll have no part of him. I'm really impressed with what he's done. I believe in the skill set. I just don't think I could ever trust the health ever again.
Well, your average NBA fan probably forgets that he was Rookie of the Year.
Oh, for sure.
And
wasn't he the first player since LeBron to average like 25, 5, and 5, wasn't he?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the skill set point of view.
Was
he
co-Rookie of the Year?
I think he just won it outright. I'll try to look it up while we're going. like he said, the three-pointers coming along to me is what's really... really surprised me. I mean, he never averaged more than 1.3 threes in a year. Now he's shooting 2.2 a game, and he's shooting 42%. Now, that might be a bit of an outlier. That might regress some. But the rest of his game, I mean, I don't see why he would fall off, to be honest, unless he does get hurt.
He's at 4 or 5. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. 22.
You're looking that up, I mean, as far as – oh, yeah, sorry.
No, he won it outright. I'm not sure who got second. I was hoping to find that, but he did win it outright.
I'm trying to remember who he beat out. Some big names. There was a...
What? Do you guys have anyone else that you'd be looking to sell high? Or, again, breakouts if you wanted to go along that route? He beat Steph Curry. Curry got second.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
But
should remember that.
But either way you want to go on it, guys you would sell high or guys you think that could break out and make an impact on the stretch for fantasy guys, because, you know, even these horrible teams end up buying out guys and somebody emerges and makes a huge difference down the stretch, excuse me. It happens every year, so...
I think some buy low potential would be, I've been looking at like Avery Bradley,
mm-hmm.
With, you know, the potential to come back and get a little more, ball handling duties. If he can get, you know, figure out his shot consistently, you know, I think, he's a potential, big buy low. I'd like to get your guys' opinion on that too, because I've been waiting. I thought he was going to have a huge year. And it just really hasn't come, but I think him and then another guy, but this is another one that Craig's probably scared to death of too, and I don't blame him, would be like a Gallinari too, who they're saying is moving around pretty good and could come back too. But those are scary guys, and those are like real like lottery ticket type of players, but
I like Avery Bradley. I agree with that. I think there's some really good buy low potential there. And the couple of shares that I do own of him, I'm certainly not looking to drop or anything just yet. I think sometimes it takes a bit of time to sort of develop in a new team. Secondly, obviously he's been banged up as well. I quite like the second half chances of Avery Bradley putting up, you know, top 50 potential, so I'm definitely looking to snag him anywhere that I can. But Gallinari, you can keep your Gallinari, Brent. I like someone who can stay on the court.
Bradley, I would agree too. The one thing that I do think will be down from last year, no matter what, is the rebounding. He averaged 6 rebounds a game. It's just not going to happen in Detroit with Drummond. It's partly because Horford's not a good rebounder, really. Boston didn't really have anyone that was that good of a rebounder. I expect those numbers to stay down. Where, I mean, he's at 2.4 a game. I think that's still a little low, but I think it goes up a bit from there, but probably not really past 3 a game. But other than that, I mean, he was shooting 46% last year. He's at 42 this year. I assume that's going to go back up. Like you said, with Reggie Jackson down, I assume the assists are going to tick up a little bit too. So I can definitely get on board with Bradley.
I think that there's a much more reliance on Bradley's offensive game, though, in Detroit. I mean, if you remember Avery Bradley when he first came into the league, I mean, you were talking about a defensive specialist.
Right.
And his offensive game is definitely, you know, it's improved no end since when he first entered the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of given time, I think that there will be more of a reliance for Detroit, because they have to rely on it, really, on Avery Bradley's offensive game. So although I think there's the natural loss in the rebounds, I definitely think there's the potential for, you know, the points, you know, additional threes, even some of the ball handling stats, even assists as well, especially with, you know, Reggie Jackson being down and not the most reliable. So, you know, I agree with that. I like that call of Avery Bradley.
What are your guys' thoughts on LaMarcus Aldridge now that Kawhi is back? Because he's had an absolutely incredible year to this point. Does it scare you that Kawhi is back for his numbers? I mean, he's looking right now at like 22-8, over a block, great free throw percentage on volume. That's always going to be there. Even half a three a game. Do you think his numbers come down at all with Kawhi starting to come back? I mean, he just played against the Knicks on Tuesday and had his best game of the year by far. He was dominant defensively, per usual, got four steals and had 25-8-4. And I think, you know, his usage is only going to go up as the season goes on. So I'm not sure you'd be able to sell high on LaMarcus, but are you worried about him, or do you still think he's going to get his and he'll be fine the rest of the way?
I'm not worried at all.
No, I'm not worried. I think the issue you've got as a LaMarcus Aldridge owner is exactly as you said, is that the majority of people are going to think that there's going to be, you know, this large drop-off is around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a guy, you know, we're talking about a guy that has second-round upside historically, maybe not got that kind of upside with the Spurs with Kawhi Leonard around. But I don't think the drop-off's going to be anywhere near as substantial as most people think. It was a guy that I liked going into the season, even without knowing Kawhi was going to be hurt, as a potential, you know, draft steal. You know, the upside is there for him to put up big numbers, just despite his age. And I think that, you know, I don't expect him to be putting up the second-round value that he had been earlier in the season.
Right.
But I don't see any reason why he can't return late third, fourth round value on the season. And I think that too many, in the market itself, too many people are going to have this perception that, you know, Kawhi's back, must sell. And right. Actually, if that's the case, I'm quite happy to buy.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with everything Craig said. I think having Kawhi Leonard back, people seem to think, you know, a guy who's, you know, a guy comes back, he scores 30 points a game, it's gonna kill the other good players. They're gonna lose, but I think it just helps them because it opens up, it just gives you easier shots. Like that, defenses were able to focus on LaMarcus, and he was able to put these types of numbers up. Now defenses are gonna have to split their focus, you know, giving LaMarcus easier looks, more open looks. You know, you might just see maybe the points come down a little bit, but I think you see his rebounding stats potentially go up a little bit more. I think you see other things open up as he gets a little more space on the court. And I think, you know, people really focused on how bad he did last year and all the attention in the playoffs, you know, that he was getting with, you know, come on, LaMarcus, step up, Kawhi's out, you got to do it, you know, and every article is just like, where's LaMarcus, and, you know, Stephen A. Smith is all over him, and, you know, these guys, and it's like, that year was the anomaly. It's not like LaMarcus just is a bad player, or it's not like he was some guy who just had one great season, and then he came back to Earth. I mean, the bad season was the anomaly. Otherwise, his career has been excellent, and so, when, you know, these are the type of guys that, like, the bounce back player, I think is the term they use. And he was easily top five in the bounce back potential category at the beginning of the year. And he's lived up to it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his numbers from this year to last, they're really not that much different. I mean, he's averaging about 5 points more, but the percentages are all the same. You know, the rebound, like everything's not much has changed, really. The one thing I could maybe see is he might, you know, he's averaging 5.3 free throws a game. Last year he was in the threes. Maybe that comes a little bit back down because he's just not going to have the ball in his hands quite as much. But I agree with you guys. I don't think it's much to panic about. But
the thing that has changed is the expectancy from the fantasy community, isn't it? Like, you know, sure, when people have invested a second round or, you know, an early third round pick in him, they expect the superstar stats. And actually, when you think about the sort of the transition, you know, obviously there were some relationship issues clearly with Pop that they ironed out, you know, that was, you know, all over the media in the off season. And LaMarcus Aldridge is about as a natural replacement as there is for Tim Duncan in terms of game wise, isn't there? They both, you know, that smooth jump shot, you know, the smart way that they play the game. So you expect that in the long run, LaMarcus Aldridge is the kind of guy which should be a key figure of this offense with the way that San Antonio played, the way that Pops plays, the type of players that he likes. And I think that it's just having that realistic expectation of what, you know, what his usage rate would be within that team. And there were warning signs there going into last season, for sure. But I think, you know, the one thing that has changed is fantasy owners' expectancy. And I think this year, because people had that fear, it was a good opportunity to pounce. And, you know, like I said, at this point, if there is anyone that is worried about the return of Kawhi, I'm more than happy to buy at the right price.
Yeah, I can get totally buy that. Bad. Yeah. Do you guys have other sell highs or potential sell highs, or do you want to move on to some, like, breakouts in the second half, potentially, either rookies or, you know, or other players you just think are going to take another step coming up?
Well, I mean, some obvious sell highs for me. I mean, Lou Williams is obviously, you know, playing ball right
now. He's on my list too, solely because he's another guy like Tyreek. He might get traded. Now the Clippers are playing well enough that they're back in the playoff picture, and maybe they won't. But you know, I assume at least the assists have to come down some with Blake being back. And like I said, maybe the Clippers go on a little bit of a downswing and they decide to dump him, and again, he can't find a better spot than he's in now. He's just been absolutely incredible.
Agree. If you can get anything for Taj Gibson as well, I mean, again, another guy that's floating right up there. I mean, I know Thibs loves him no end, but again, is this sustainable? Sure. But in that Timberwolves lineup, I don't think I want to rely on this top season value that he's putting up. You know, same with Darren Collison, same with Courtney Lee. I mean, they're all guys where I see this as their top end. I don't see them producing better than this right now. So if I can get, you know, equal kind of value on where they are right now, I'm jumping all over it faster than a tramp on chips, you know, because I just don't see. I don't see anybody, any situation where, you know, it can move up. I think that the only way it can move is down.
What about like a Donovan Mitchell? Is there a rookie wall? Because it seems like Simmons, you know, would have been a good sell high a few weeks ago, and he sort of kind of hit a little slump. Is that defenses adjusting? Is it just the the NBA season and the length and the speed, like just catching up with these young guys? I mean, I know they're young and should be able to run forever, but the NBA is so intense compared to college, and defenses and coaches adjust. You know, is someone like Donovan Mitchell a good sell high, or is he, you know, going to keep it up?
I'm probably not the best person to answer because I'm completely biased in this situation, so I'll let Craig answer first, at least.
Well, you say you're biased. I think you might remember at the start of the season when we had to do our, you know, Razzball writer picks. My breakout, my sleeper pick was Donovan Mitchell going into the season when we did our picks. So I've probably got a bit of bias there as well. I don't have any concerns with Donovan Mitchell going forward. You know, he is a rookie. There's going to be, you know, the odd shooting slump here and there. But the Utah Jazz's need for his type of game is, you know, it's very, very high. I mean, as soon as the Utah Jazz traded for that pick and drafted him, I loved his situation there because the Utah Jazz really needed some, you know, some perimeter offense. They pride themselves also on the defensive point of view, and Donovan Mitchell's got a very underrated defensive game as well. I mean, Utah Jazz needs Donovan Mitchell, so I have zero concerns about him moving forward, and I think the kid's a superstar, I really do, superstar in the making.
Yeah.
And if
he reminds me of Dwayne Wade, except he can actually shoot threes. Like, he's... What he did last month is just ridiculous. I mean, he shot over 50%. He shot 90% from the line. He shot almost 50% from three, averaging 21 points. And I'll just run through the schedule quick because I know, being a Utah fan, how brutal it was. These are the teams he played against in this month. At Oklahoma City, Houston, Milwaukee, Chicago, Boston, Cleveland, Houston, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Denver, Golden State, Cleveland. They had probably the worst schedule stretch any team is going to have in the entire league this year, and it's only going to get easier for them with who they're playing. I mean, sure, is he going to shoot 50% from the field? Probably not. I mean, he shot 74% at the rim last month. It's hard to expect a guy who's 6'2", even with his 6'10 wingspan, to be able to do that. Could the shooting regress some? Sure. But, I mean, he is just absolutely unbelievable. As big of a homer as I am, I just did not see him being at this level his first year. But I mean, especially given that, you know, the first month of the year, he looked lost. And, you know, part of it, at least on the offensive end, was the shots weren't going down. But, I mean, he's played his way to definitely be in consideration for Rookie of the Year with Simmons. I mean, it looked like Simmons was going to run away. And he's still probably the favorite just because the writers like to look at the, you know, the popcorn stats, basically. And Simmons is averaging, you know, whatever, 17, 8, and almost 8 assists, I think, last I looked. You know, sure, he can't shoot threes, but it doesn't really matter and when he's doing what he's doing. But I couldn't bring myself to sell off Mitchell. It's just, there's no way Utah can survive without him. I mean, you're seeing Rubio's minutes go down. Rubio against Cleveland was having an excellent game and still up down the stretch that they benched him. And they went to line up with Mitchell, Hood, Ingles, Favors, and Jarebko at the four, stretch him out. I mean, even when Gobert comes back, I don't know if they're going to move Favors or just keep him and let him go after the season. There's no way he's going to come back. I mean, he's a great player, but just the two of them, you know, the two bigs together just really doesn't work in the modern NBA. But no one else is putting up shot volume on this team besides Hood, and that number is even going to go down when Gobert comes back because, I mean, he can't shoot outside of 5 feet, really. So the usage is going to be there as long as the field goal, like, there's some chance he just goes through a cold stretch and he hurts your field goal percentage. But at this rate, it seems even kind of unlikely he's going to do that. It's kind of remarkable just how good this rookie class has been top to bottom. I mean, this is arguably the best since the LeBron year.
What makes it even more incredible is when you look at the, I mean, obviously, you know, the rookies is what I write about for Rasbourne. You know, this is a sort of like a hot topic of interest for me. It's the age of these guys as well. You know, a lot of these guys, I mean, Donovan Mitchell's a sophomore, but a lot of these guys are, you know, they're freshmen last year. So when you see what people like Tatum are doing, for example, it's remarkable to think that he's doing this as a 19-year-old. You know, such efficient shooting.
Well, look at, like, when Kobe coming into the league, Craig, you know, at his age, you know, he was not great that first year, you know? And these guys are the same age as him and putting up ridiculous numbers.
Well, the other go-to, even in more of modern time, is someone like Giannis. Giannis's first season, we could all see the potential. But in 22 minutes, still only averaged, I think, was it 8.2 or 6.2 points?
Yeah, it
wasn't much. But we all saw the potential. You saw the freak athleticism. We knew he was going to be a good player. But you look at a lot of these guys. I mean, you look at the freshman list from there. You got, I mean, Lauri Markkanen, De'Aaron Fox, Lonzo Ball, Markelle Fultz, Josh Jackson, Jonathan Isaac. And they all have considerable talent, regardless of whether they're putting up the numbers this season. As long as you realise that a lot of these guys really are not pure shooters and that a lot of them are going to hurt you in the, you know, the field goal or free throw shooting department, you can find your value that way. But these are super talented guys. They really are. And to sort of write a lot of these guys off now just because of, you know, Markel Fultz just because of the injury, or Lonzo Ball because of the percentages. You know, it's a foolish mistake to make. I mean, and even like John Collins and Donovan Mitchell, they were both just sophomores last year.
Right.
You know, they're both guys. You know, we're not talking about a guy like Buddy Hield, who was, you know, a one-year senior outlier with no athleticism. We're talking about guys that have got some serious upside. You know, Jarrett Allen, another freshman. Bam Adebayo, I mean, he looks like he should have been a senior, but again, we're talking about another freshman. I mean, these are guys with serious talent. They really are.
Yeah, I mean, being a hockey.
Yeah, I was gonna. I was gonna say, like a Dennis Smith Jr. was gonna be one of my breakouts for the second half. I mean, he's sort of him and Jared Allen as well. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. was way more hyped and stuff, but so, you know, it's sort of an easy call to say, like, he could break out. Those last few games he's had have been amazing. He's hitting clutch shots down the stretch, which is just going to earn the coach's trust for more minutes. And I wanted to jump in when Craig said Jared Allen. It's tough because Brooklyn has so many options at center, especially now when they're going to try to showcase Okafor a little bit and see what they got. I don't know that Allen necessarily will be able to do it this year for fantasy people. I know there's a lot of guys sitting on him based on, like, Son's advice, which is, you know, his son recognizes the talent there in Allen and the fantasy potential. I'm a little concerned. And I was going to ask you guys, I don't want to get off topic because you're about to jump into something, Alex, but just when you guys get a chance, comment on Jared Allen and the potential with that kind of the cluster of big men there in Brooklyn.
Future. I mean, the other thing is you got to realize that Jarrett Allen's the kind of guy that doesn't need 30 minutes a game to hold significant value.
Right.
If he could average 20, 22 minutes, you're gonna see more than worthy pickup value there. And if you watched his game as a Longhorn last season, it was clear to see the potential was there. And if you sort of rewound a year before the draft, there was a lot of scouts that sort of thought he had top five potential in the draft. He had that kind of, that kind of stock as, you know, going into college game. But again, you know, I think there's value there primarily because he doesn't need 28 minutes, 30 minutes, 22 minutes a game. And you'll see more than enough reason to be able to hold him, you know, the points, you know. The offense is obviously a game in work in progress. But you're going to get enough defensive stats there in order to warrant picking him up. And with the way that big men go down, he's a guy that's always going to be worth monitoring.
And they're obviously...
I would lump him with Jordan Bell. Like, that type of guy who needs maybe 15, 20 minutes, like you said, to dominate. Sorry, Alex.
No, I was just going to say, like, they have no incentive to play any of these other centers really either. They don't have their pick. They're going to gradually increase his minutes as the season goes on, and it's only going to be better for Allen. I mean, he was on my list, most of the guys that you had, and John Collins is at the top of my list. You look at what he's done the last 30 games, he's averaging 10-7 with almost a steal a game and a block and a half in only 22 minutes. Ilyasova right now is playing almost 30 minutes a game. Miles Plumlee's playing like 20 minutes a game. Like, I expect Ilyasova to get traded for a second-round pick somewhere. It happens every year. I mean, yes, Deadman's been out, but and so has Muscala for that matter. But I don't see why they wouldn't be giving Collins pushing 30 minutes by the end of the year. And if that happens, go ahead.
I've been saying
Collins all season.
I wrote an interesting piece in the preseason, just going into the season, comparing John Collins and Jarrett Allen for Rasball, which guy I preferred. Mm-hmm. And they're both, Collins has, and he had going into the season and all through college last year, he had the athleticism there. He just didn't really know how to use it. And I can see, more experience in the professional game. Collins really showing his value, really raising as he learns how to use that athleticism. Whereas Jarrett Allen in college, he was a bit more polished. You've got to bear in mind that John Collins is a year older. Collins is a sophomore, and Allen was a freshman last year. But Allen, to the eye, looked like he had more natural talent. Collins looked a little bit more, I don't know, high energy rushed, if that makes sense. You could see the athleticism, but you could see that he put himself in foul trouble because he didn't know how to use it. And so I think that for me, a lot of Collins is about how he learns how to play. You know, the tools are there. It's how he learns to play the NBA game. Mm-hmm. I think with Allen, I think that there's a bit more polish in how to use the athleticism. But you know, I wrote a piece going into the season comparing the both of them, just those two players specifically. Mm-hmm. They were both guys that I liked going into the season and targeted. But again, it's just this patience with the rookies, isn't it? I mean, Collins is in that ideal situation. Atlanta not playing for anything. They recognise they've got this exciting talent. I think it's the same with Allen. You know, guys like Mozgov, they're not the future. And I think that it won't take too long before the Brooklyn realise that Okafor isn't either.
Tyler Zeller minutes too, and they'll get to the point that by the end these guys will be getting minutes. You have to hope so. I mean, the only thing, like, the shot volume's not going to be there for Allen, and it might be for Collins. It's just, like, once Russell gets back to. But, I mean, both of these guys, if they're getting 25 minutes, they could both average two blocks relatively easy, and that alone is plenty of value, let alone the rebounding and everything else that comes with it. But, yeah, I mean, this rookie class is just it's spectacular. It sounds like a broken record, but...
And they're not the only ones. Like Brent said, you've got Jordan Bell, who's probably got a more complete game. I mean, not necessarily an actual scorer as such, but his ability to facilitate the ball, the blocks and steals are there. You expect a high field goal percentage from him there. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't entirely surprise me.
Free throws.
it wouldn't entirely surprise me, not necessarily this season, but if Hassan Whiteside is traded by the Heat and they decide enough's enough with the injury point of view, and then you got Bam Adebayo stepping into this role, a guy that I was really high on coming into the season, not necessarily for this season, but more for dynasty teams. I mean, you saw him at Kentucky last year. The guy had an NBA body to die for. It was all about the game slowing down for him, and he had a spectacular summer league, and he's carried on that kind of that form to the eye into the season as well. So, like I said, we're talking about rookies and sophomores here, and the fact that a lot of these guys are even cracking the rotation and playing significant minutes is a plus from a long term point of view, let alone the stats that they're putting out.
Right, and we haven't even mentioned Kuzma, who, sure, he's a little down in fantasy because the steals and blocks really aren't there, but I mean, what he's doing already offensively is just remarkable. And he was a guy who went 27th in the draft. Like, it's just crazy how many guys up and down contributing.
But no, I think any serious writer that covers college or anything, no one expected this from Kuzma. This wasn't the player that we saw in college. We knew the guy could shoot. We knew that he was going to stretch the floor. But the way the NBA game has just slowed down to him is phenomenal, really. And it's good to see. It is encouraging to see guys like, we knew Jordan Bell had serious upside from an athletic standpoint. Kyle Kuzma, we looked at and we thought Channing Frye, I agree. It's good to see.
Yeah, I was I have a little bit of breaking news, I guess. Avery Bradley played 37 minutes tonight.
Man, there's so many coaches doing this, playing these guys so many minutes in his first game back. It just seems kind of crazy to me. But, 15-4-4, that's obviously a solid start coming back.
He shot 31%, but he hit 3-3.
Okay.
And I was going to say another breakout guy that I saw last night, and this is a tough one to put a finger on just because the Kings have been so kind of unpredictable with their lineups. But and I'm totally going to butcher this name. Maybe the Buff guy can help me with Skal Labissiere.
He's a guy I really like. And it's just a matter of him getting minutes. I don't – like, they're wasting their time playing so many of these other guys, and I don't know, when they're going to start playing him more. But he was a guy who – he didn't do too much at Kentucky, but he was considered one of the best, high school recruits in the
outside. He was considered a number one overall pick at one. He had that kind of the game that the scouts liked coming out of high school. Yeah.
Man,
I see him. You know, he does have a similar fantasy game to like a Zach Randolph, where, you know, a lot of points and boards, good field goal percentage. You know, he's a good free throw shooter, which I really like from a guy who gets rebounds. It's tough to find these days. But you know, not a lot of peripheral stats.
No, but I think,
but you know, if you got a bench spot,
where Labissiere is going to hold value down the run is, I think if you look at the Sacramento Kings model, and if we remove George Hill and Zebo away from the equation, there's a lot of the old style Washington Wizards style there from a few seasons ago when they were building. Someone like Scal Labissiere is really going to benefit by the progress of a guy like De'Aaron Fox, because he's a big who can run the floor, and De'Aaron Fox is going to use that speed, and the transition play for the Kings is going to be absolutely crucial. Like the Wizards, they're trying to develop these wings that can shoot the three, and two bigs in Willie Cauley-Stein and Labissiere who can run the floor really well. So I think as the season goes on, he's exactly the kind of guy I like. And I think it's important to remember, you know, guys like Labissiere, Zubac, another guy at the Lakers, you know, if they deal Randle and Brook Lopez, Zubac is another guy, and even maybe a bit further down the sort of radar, if Marc Gasol gets hurt or injured, Deonta Davis is another guy. You know, he was another guy who had considerable talent at Michigan, very, very sort of high ceiling there if the game can develop. So they are the kind of guys, I think, second half that you really should be, you know, at least have on your watch list to see what happens at the trade deadline or injury-wise.
Yeah, and another king that, and this guy, I admit, I've picked him up and dropped him probably more than any other player so far, has been Bogdanovich. That guy has so much potential for assists, for threes, for just an all around fantasy game, kind of like maybe a Josh Richardson kind of game in a sense. Just,
I mean, yeah, the blocks are going to be there, but I mean, he should be a guy who's like decent or good at everything and not hurting you anywhere, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love the assists from a bigger guy.
But do you think that that's going to come down with Fox now healthy? Do you think the ball handling opportunities in that second unit are going to come down a bit for Bogdanovich? I mean, I see the guy.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I see the guy. You know, I have no issues with the guy, and I've seen the guy a lot playing Europe. You know, I watch a lot of European basketball, naturally being British myself. But he to me is another one of these sort of low ceiling, high floor guys. You know, the guy can play basketball. I don't see the game really there to sort of take it to the next level, but one of those stream options which you can sort of rely on with semi-confidence that he's going to help your team in some way.
Yeah, I could see him averaging, you know, like 15, 4-4 kind of thing with maybe a 3 and a steal.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the long run for me, I think 4 assists might be a bit high in the long run. But yeah, I mean, it's feasible. But from a sort of an upside standpoint, I don't think for me it's a guy. I don't see the upside there, like to take his game to the next level. I see the upside there for the, you know, to pick him up from the waiver wire. He isn't a guy that I necessarily track as someone that's sort of going to be able to take that game much further than where he is now. You know, we're not talking about the sort of youngest rookie in the world either. I mean, what is he off the top of my head? I think he's 25, is he?
It sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah.
I love having the European perspective, by the way, on these guys, because I don't get to see a lot of these guys when they're kind of coming up. We just sort of see them when they hit the league, and a lot of them look like they have this potential. So it's great to have Craig's perspective from actually seeing, you know, what they did coming up, as we get to watch, you know, so a lot of these guys in college, you know, getting to see them up there, because I really have no idea who these guys are when they show up in the draft.
It's not an easy transition to make as necessarily trying to judge from college, I'd say. Even within Europe, there's different, you know, different leagues play very different style. I mean, one league I like to watch of is the Adriatic League. And, you know, the guys that you've seen that's come out of that, you know, Zubac, Jokic, Zizic, Nurkic, all the itches, if you like. There's some success stories, but for every success story, there's guys you also get excited about. And I think it's learning to sort of see how the game is translatable from that point of view. I mean, another, you talk about the Cavaliers, another guy that I like in the long run is Ante Zizic, a guy that was drafted by Boston. He was another guy that went over in the trade. He destroyed the Adriatic League. His first taste of EuroLeague was really, really exciting. But, you know, that's another guy that, not this season, that I wouldn't necessarily rule out as another decent European, you know, low-ceiling, high-floor guy. You know, the guy can board, the guy can score. His transition game is outstanding. He can really run the floor, and that's something which could be of real benefit in the long run, I think, for the Cavaliers. But you do get a lot of these low-ceiling, high-floor guys. And it's nice when you see these, the high-ceiling guys that break out, like, your Nikola Jokic, for example, Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's a very different style of basketball over here in Europe to like the college game, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about Delon Wright for a second? I was just looking at his game tonight. Tonight he goes shoots 66%, just under 30 minutes, 4 threes, 25 points, 13 boards, 5 assists, 4 steals, and a block.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, right now they're saying that he's, over the last 7 games, he's returning like early round value.
I mean,
his defensive stats are crazy. He's got a couple blocks, multiple steals, with assists, boards, points, 3. I mean, talk about a stat stuffer.
I mean, the young guys on Toronto are the only reason I'm not like completely writing them off to make a run this year. Like, most of the time you just say, oh, Toronto's going to get to the second round and they're going to lose. And yeah, sure, they had the 1 year, they made the conference finals, but that was the most lopsided 6-game series ever. But between Powell, Wright, Poeltl, Siakam,
Anunoby.
Anunoby looks great. Yeah, like, there is some upside there, finally.
I think they've done a good job of drafting really well. And not
Masai Ujiri's great. I mean, they have one high pick.
Poeltl or?
Yeah, Poeltl was 9th. Other than that, I mean, they're all guys in the 20s or later, really.
Yeah, but they punted on the upside and not rushing point of view. I mean, Delon Wright, was at University of Utah, I think it was a U, and he put up big numbers there. You know, he was an oversized guard, rebounded the ball really well, high-volume scorer there, as you'd naturally imagine. You know, he had a lot of pedigree and a lot of talent coming into the league. I mean, the guy they drafted this year, OG, he's, you know, he was always considered a very, very high upside guy, especially on the defensive end. Yeah. One of the best college games I've ever seen from a defensive standpoint was when he really burst onto the scene, not last year, the year before, in the NCAA tournament. He shut out Jamal Murray, and it was beautiful to watch. But, you know, they took the chance on the guy that had the season-ending injury, and it's really panning off. And again, we're talking about, you know, a sophomore rookie. Jakob Poeltl, another guy that was at Utah. Again, I think another one of these low-ceiling, high-floor guys. I think they've done a really good job of the right roster construction, and not rushing these guys either. You know, making sure it's the right time, the right place, not overly reliant.
For sure. I know you're not a Suns fan, but you are in Phoenix, Brent. Do you have like any faith in any of these guys emerging down the stretch to be fantasy relevant, whether it's Chris or Bender or anyone outside of really Booker and Warren?
I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in Bender. Early in the season, I thought Bender had a really good, you know, potential to be sort of a Lauri Markkanen type of, you know, boards and threes. But in Chris, I mean, anyone who's owned Chris over the last couple of years, I mean, this guy is the most frustrating player, and I do watch a lot of Suns games just because they're on TV, and this guy's athleticism is off the charts. And I mean, he has so much potential. It's just so frustrating that he can't put it together, and he has that fouling issue that has really hurt guys like Collins and got, you know, guys with all this, that they have so much energy that they get out of control. And, you know, Chris just had a good game last night. And in the recap, I was writing a little bit about how frustrating he is now. He's like, it's that little teaser that he gives you once in a while that shows his potential. But really, the only Suns guy that I have any faith in to be consistent is Booker. I don't like any of their point guards. They're just going to have a great game here or there. You know, Josh Jackson, his potential. I love TJ Warren, but and that dude, TJ Warren, could easily is a guy who, if he scored 50 points, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Like, he's got that kind of like scoring game, but there's a lot of times where he tends to hide and kind of disappear during games and sort of and give it up to other guys. And from a fantasy perspective, he just doesn't give you a lot of other stuff besides scoring and some rebounds. So that's frustrating from a fantasy perspective. Booker is, you know, another level. I mean, that guy's ridiculous and a fantasy stud. So we don't even have to talk about him. But I think from a fantasy perspective, it would go like Booker, then Warren at this point, and then Chris, with Tyson Chandler's is sort of flirting in there, you know. Just, but I mean, their center situation in Len and Monroe. I mean, what they're doing with the centers, I just don't understand. I mean, just get rid of one of the guys, like just trade one of those guys.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you gotta imagine they're gonna buy out Monroe. I mean, it's crazy.
That poor Monroe. Chris, this is not going to be the year that he puts it together. I don't have much confidence in the second half, even this year. I don't know about you guys. Maybe next year someone's going to draft him too high, or maybe he's that guy that finally breaks out.
I went on this huge rant on a podcast. I think it was with Sun in the summer, because I played poker full time. I was in Vegas, saw some summer league. Chris looks so fat and out of shape, and I'm like, this guy is supposed to be this huge freak athlete, and I'm just like, does he even care? And, you know, we talked about it earlier, too. You know, Bender.
And he didn't look like he cared in the games either, did
he? No.
You know, there was all the reports coming out, and I watched, you know, nearly all the Summer League games, and he just didn't look like he cared on the court. And some of the fouls that were being given against him, it was almost like he had just run out of energy and just, like, couldn't be bothered.
It was so bizarre. And, again, you know, he's 20 years old and so is Bender, so you don't want to, like, write him off completely. Chris almost averaged 1-1-1 last year playing 21 minutes. Like, the potential is clearly there. But he might just be one of those guys that just doesn't care. You look at his last five games, and it's a really solid stretch. I mean, there's some – he's getting double digits consistently. The blocks and steals are both – well, I mean, the blocks are over one and the steals are over two in that stretch. I mean, granted, that's because of a five-steal game. But you see the potential, and then it just, like, completely goes away. He's definitely near the top of my list of most frustrating guys in the league.
Well, I have baseball guys will get this reference, but I call it the Andrew Jones syndrome. You know, there's these guys that are just so gifted naturally that when they're younger they barely have to try and they're just amazing. They don't need to have the kind of heart and work ethic that a guy like Isaiah Thomas has to develop, or, you know, even like a Dennis Rodman, you know, who, you know, had to be crazy committed to make it. You know, these guys don't have to be like that. And what happens is, you know, you get a guy like LeBron who has both. He has the physical gifts and the mental toughness and the drive, and then you become the greatest player of all time. Or you're Andrew Jones, who has all these gifts. He can be an all-star, he can do all this, but you only get so far. You don't reach that greatness without the heart and the mental toughness and that competitiveness. And Chris is one of those guys that just has come so easy for him his whole life. He's never had to develop that mental toughness, that want, and we're starting to see it translate now. It's starting, and he's probably frustrated that it's so hard for him, that he's just, instead of going, I need to work harder and push it, he's thinking, oh man, this sucks, I don't even want to do this, like, this isn't fun because it's not easy. And, you know, I might be wrong, I hope I'm wrong, I hope he's just figuring things out, but, you know, some of those guys just never put it together.
Yeah, but in his defense, he still is only 20 years old. I mean, like, we all know the fantasy upside because of the defensive stats and the ability to stretch the floor as well. I wonder sometimes whether he's just in the wrong situation in Phoenix as well. Not necessarily from a playing time point of view, but you know, from a mentoring point of view. I mean, who is it that's really there that's gonna bring his type of game along? From
he should be spending all day with Jared Dudley, honestly. But you know, they gave Jared Dudley $10 million a year solely to bring these guys along, and I don't. It's just, yeah, I don't want to judge the guy. I don't know him at all. He's 20 years old, but it's the first time he's faced adversity, and I don't know. We'll see. You're definitely right. It's not a good situation to be in. I mean, we don't know how good even like Booker is, because it's such a situation. Like, they haven't had a meaningful game in so long, and you just don't know if any of these guys really can contribute to winning basketball. And like you said, the veteran presence really isn't there, especially, you know, if they buy out Chandler too or whatever they're going to do. It's just a tough situation, just overloaded with kids, and there's just no clear leader at all.
No, I agree.
Well, don't feel bad, guys. It's our job to judge people we don't know. I mean, that's right.
Is there anything else either you guys want to talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. It's 5:26 in the morning here. Yes. Looking for a long day ahead.
Can I bring up one pickup that maybe people want to keep an eye on?
Sure.
Just with this Oladipo injury, you know, if somehow in your league Lance Stephenson is there, you know, he's when keep an eye on what he does when Oladipo's not playing and Stephenson starting. I mean, they're, especially if you're an Oladipo owner and you're freaking out that this injury might be a little more serious, if Stevens is there, take a look. He's carried me through a little bit as an Oladipo owner. He's eased the blow quite a bit here and there. He'll have a stinker. He's not as consistent, obviously, but...
Yeah, I mean, looking at his ownership...
The stats are there.
He's still available in, like, 85, 90% of leagues, so you could definitely grab him. And it's really... Yep. It's going to be popcorn stat heavy, but, I mean, you need points, rebounds, and assists, and... Yeah, like you said, he could at least ease the pain a little bit. Definitely, at least for a short-term option. I still can't believe how good Indiana's been, but that's a talk for another day. Thank you guys both for coming
on. Sure. Yeah, but thank you so much for having me. Yeah, thank you, Alex. Thanks, Greg. It was really fun.
You know, if there's anything you want us to talk about in the future, go to basketball.rasball.com. Be one of the first posts on there, you know, and let us know in the comments section what you liked, what you didn't like, what you'd want us to change in the future. We'll get back to doing this a bit more regularly. You know, the guests may change, or you know, maybe you guys become mainstays. I don't know. It all depends on our schedules. But like to get the basketball side of things going. It's, you know, that time of the year. You know, things are picking up, and glad to be back on with both you guys again. You guys have a Twitter or anywhere you want people to reach you, or just to read your articles at Rasball?
Well, you can reach me at Storytelling41 on Twitter. I'm a bit of a I don't use it frequently. I'm kind of, you know, I have a little spell of a few weeks where I heavily use it and then ignore it for a few weeks. So everything on there is. It tends to be much more prospect related in baseball and basketball. So if that's your kind of thing, playing dynasty leagues, be sure to look it up.
Cool. How about anything?
Yeah, and I'd say for me, I love comments on the Rasball articles that I write. Just interacting and, you know, answering questions and speculating. That's one of my favorite things to do. And you can also, if you have any questions or, you know, just want to, you know, talk about basketball or any fantasy sport, I have a Twitter account. It's at the Fantasy Dick. Fantasy Dick. Yep.
You can just follow me at Rasball.
I've been featured on Jimmy Fallon. Yeah.
That's cool. You can follow me at Rasball. You can follow me at Rasball Viz on Twitter, VIZ. The Hockey Podcast with Reed is going with me as well. The football guys did their football podcast tonight, so that'll be out for the playoffs for all of you guys who are looking for that. Even the baseball was going to get going soon from what I've been told from Gray. So things are starting to pick up at Razz Ball, and like I said, hopefully we get this podcast going again on a regular basis. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon. Take care, everybody.